I'm going to introduce you. Don't need to. Do you know how to distribute your good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Can we settle down so I could really quickly introduce Clarissa? And so she can, which is far more interesting than me. I want to tell you about her CV quickly, which is impressive. Say the least. All right. Can you hear me if I speak like this now? Okay. We're very fortunate to have Terry Zai. I read an article about her in the newspaper, which is how we got to her. And I think it was when she. I think it was an article in one of the dailies. I can't remember what it was.
Probably. I don't know.
July, August, if not. July last year, somewhere around there. And we contacted her, and she turned out to be fabulous find from the other things we read about subsequently. She did say to me when we said we were in this venue, she spent many hours in this venue. Let me tell you why. She graduated in 2006 with a BA, and this is the Cromwell Law Building. So she graduated with a BA with majors in history and law, and then she did graduate in 2010 with an LLB degree. And then she joined the School of Legal Practice, there, the School of Legal Practice also at this university in the first half of 2011. But while she was a student, she also didn't sit down. She was a volunteer tutor for Shorka for 2 years. She was a paralegal for the Treatment Action Campaign. She was the president of the Law Students Forum. And she was also the national leader for the Young Independent Democrats, which is now the Young Independent Democrats Student Organization. And she's now, at this extremely young age, the director of the program Young in Prison. So she's clearly a mover and shaker, and it gets better. Her awards, in 2006, she got the Humanities Students Achievers Scholarship. In 2011, she featured in the Mail and Guardian 200 Young South Africans, which is another source of where we read about her. Then she was a finalist at a very young age. I don't think I've ever come across anybody that young. For the Shoprite Checkers Woman of the Year, and in the category Good Neighbours Against Crime. And then she featured again last year in the Mail and Guardian for Women. So I think we've got a person who's got a very bright future ahead of her, and I think she's doing remarkable work, and not easy work, and please form her well. Welcome to the
I think they should always introduce someone and read their CV after the lecture, not before, because then it kind of puts the pressure on you to impress and try to live up to all these things that they read. So I hope that you enjoy what I have to say. But no more than enjoy, I hope that you learn something. And more than learn, I hope that you act upon what you learn. That's what it is about. I mean, it is about children, and most children need people to act for them. But also they are actors in their own right. So if they're equipped well enough to be able to be agents of their own change, then yeah, basically you have a brighter future ahead of you. So that's what we are here to talk about. I'm specifically going to be talking about the Child Justice Act that has been enacted since 2010 and officially. So it has a long history in South Africa in terms of it being actually coming to life. It stayed as a bill for a long time. I'm sure most of people doubted that it will ever be enacted. I was in primary school when I was reading the history about it. I was in primary school when they first announced the idea of the bill. That was in 98. So only in 2010, when I was graduating from my LLB, was it passed. So you can imagine the history and the debates and all of that that it had to go through. So what is the Child Justice Act? The Child Justice Act basically governs children who come into conflict with the law. And throughout my whole lecture, I'll be talking about children more than versus juvenile. I mean, that's the term that was being used before juvenile delinquents and all of that, and to bring our language into the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child and Africa, and the African Charter as well. We'll be talking about children in conflict with the law, youth in conflict with the law, and I think that's quite just nice to bring into all the human rights thing. Basically, it governs children that have not reached the age of majority in this country. It's now 18 and not 21. And at a later stage, we'll discuss sentencing, because of course that's where most of my work comes from and my experience comes from, is kids that after the sentencing phase. We do advocate, of course, the pre-sentence, because we ourselves are trying to work ourselves out of the business. I hope that one day I do not have to go into prison and see a child or a young person imprisoned. So most of the content of this lecture is trying to make you aware of what is contained in the Child Justice Act and why it's necessary to have it there so that we avoid having children in prison. Of course, every lecture in South Africa, I'm sure someone somewhere quotes Mandela. And Mandela, in 94, in his first State of Nation address, the first thing that he says, one of the major things that everyone quoted, was the fact that children should be governed by a different law other than the normal law. And that set the tone for South Africa. And in 95, the following year, on the 16th of June, what is 16th of June in South Africa? Youth Day. So it just shows that maybe there's some tone that the young people who died on the 16th of June, 1976, kind of blessed that day, I think. And in 1995, on the 16th of June, South Africa signed the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And that set the tone, of course, for basically trying to, for organizations, civil organizations, even government itself, trying to start thinking about how to better deal with children coming into the law, in conflict with the law. How do we better deal with them instead, so that they do not sit in prison, but that they at least move faster out of the system and go back into school and become productive citizens. So that's what we're going to be dealing with. Basically, and of course we have our beautiful constitution, Section 28 guarantees the rights of the child, and 1G specifically guarantees rights for the child who come in conflict with the law. So that's also the perfect thing, and the whole musical starts. So we start from there. So the Constitution and the CRC are foundational keys of the CJA, as I've mentioned. The history, of course, we've already talked about, the fact that it is going to... Okay, I'll try. Can you all hear me now, if I project my voice this way? All right. Okay. Sorry? All right, I will try my best to articulate stuff. Okay, so basically, we can start by what are the objects of the act itself. Don't worry, I used to be late myself in this. I did labor law in this classroom, so I had a history myself. Don't worry. Okay, so basically, the objects of this, and I want to go through the objects, particularly because we're going to, I'm old school, if you notice. I'm technologically challenged despite my age. So I use a chalk instead of PowerPoint. I noticed when I walked in, they had a little fancy computer and everything here. It didn't work, I guess. And the basic words that we will deal with is holistic. And you'll notice also in our work, we're going to talk, when I make reference to young in prison, holistic comes. Because when a child is involved, there are different factors that play, there are different actors that also basically affect the child. And the objects of the act, number one, is to protect the children as provided for in the Constitution, which we've mentioned before. Promotes the spirit of Ubuntu in the child justice system through fostering children's sense of dignity and worth, reinforcing children's respect for human rights, and the fundamental freedoms of others by holding children accountable for their actions and safeguarding the interests of the victim. I think it's quite important at this point to know that the act is not trying to say we are soft on crime, we let children walk away, that they are responsible and they're made to understand their responsibility, but through a human rights type of action and not through punitive measures. So that's quite important.
that supporting reconciliation by means of a restorative justice response involving parents, families, victims, and where appropriate, other members of the community affected by crime in procedures in terms of this act in order to encourage the reintegration of children. I think that's where the holistic thing comes, is that their families, Ubuntu, and I'm going to put Ubuntu in government, you know, because they need a lot of governance themselves in order to uphold most of their rights. This is government, sorry. And the act itself. And that's where it is. And then it says, provide this for the special treatment of children in a child justice system designed to break the cycle of crime, which will contribute to safer communities and encourage these children to become law-abiding and productive citizens. And productive adults, actually, you know, citizens. And one of the things that I find missing, of course, you want them to work, you want them to become productive citizens, but you also want them to become to play a constructive role in society. I think there's quite a lot of things that, for me, especially in our communities, in traditional type of communities, that children are people who get, are people you give, are people you discipline, but they're not participants. They do not think and they can't be agents for their own change. And that's quite something that we need to change in the mind. I wanted and I hope that that's something that they would include in the act, that they are constructive participants in their own change. Because within the law, once the part of it is that kids are just given, and most of them come in conflict with the law because they're handed a society that is corrupt, that is already dysfunctional. And when they're handed that society, now you're expecting them to be this positive person. Then they fail, of course, and they come in conflict with the law. And then you put them in a system where now the law governs them. And when the law governs them, for them to understand what the law is or what the policies that are governing them while they're inside prison or the youth care centers, we'll discover later, since they're not necessarily in detention centers, you need them to understand that in a more participatory manner, that they're involved. And if you track, actually, the participation level of children when the bill was being debated, actually couldn't figure out at what level were children involved in participating in the whole debate, in the robust debate, or in the cycle of the bill itself until it became an act. So that's something that I find lacking in it, and I think that's something to think about. But maybe someone would like to add something about child participation, considering that there are no children even in this lecture. I mean, feel free to discuss something with me, and I'm all about participation.
Can you distinguish between child and juvenile?
Okay. We're going to get to the ages, but I can always skip to that. Juvenile was a term that was just used for all people under a certain age of majority, in terms of previously, traditionally, it was always under 21. In South Africa specifically, it's now under 18. So a child is defined, according to the Children's Act, as under 18. Any person who is under 18. In the Correctional Services Act, which is the act that governs our correctional facilities, prisons, juvenile is until 21. They still use the term juvenile, which is 21. So they have what they call a juvenile facility, which they've now changed or recently now calling youth care centers, and that's the term they're kind of using now, youth care centers. But basically, youth would be juvenile. So those are the age groups, basically, that they would use.
Would a child have to be at puberty and then puberty at 18 or 20 in another category?
Sorry?
Would a child not be at puberty and then from puberty to 18 or 20 in another category?
Yes, well, 18 to 21 is another category in the Correctional Services Act. But in terms of our act, or in terms of the age of majority, basically you are a child till you're 18. So they're affected in questions of puberty or when it stops or when it starts. They just say, well, you are a child till you're 18. So from 0 to 18, you are a child. You are defined as a child.
Okay.
I think it's quite important to remember that, and I'm sure there is something in the medical profession who will tell you there is a limit, for example, in children's hospital,
yes.
Take children only to a certain age.
Yes, I mean, I know in Red Cross.
You have to differentiate.
Yes. Well, in Red Cross, for instance, I mean, I'm not that knowledgeable in medical stuff, but I know at Red Cross Hospital, when you're 14, when you're 13 years old, from 14 they don't take you. You have to go to a normal hospital.
Right.
You know, exactly. But in terms of the law, you are I know, like, you can't sign contracts. You don't have the capacity to sign contracts, for instance, till you're 18 and all of that. You need consent to marry if you want to marry or do anything before the age of 18, that sort of thing.
I'll just one other question only, because it becomes very relevant.
Yes.
The age issue. I notice in Britain, if a child arrives, says, well, out of a tree and broken an arm,
yes.
And he's perhaps 12 or 11,
yes.
And they want to do something about it, and therefore he needs a consent and operation, and the family can't be contacted immediately. If the medical professional, every seeing him, reckon that he's a kid with enough knowledge to understand what's happening, they would take his signature as the
really?
Right operation. It depends on the particular person in that kind of
and the
situation.
Medical profession is the right to make the decision.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I just ask you, in terms of the list, police arrest of children?
Yes. Okay, so we are going to be talking about minimum age of responsibility now, because that's one of the biggest things that the Act itself deals with. Basically, in the Act, it provides for it basically is now increased. So before, it used to be you are not criminally responsible till you're 7. Now they've increased the age till 10. So they can arrest you from the age of 10, between 10, but from 10 to 14, so if you're 10 years old, but you're under the age of 14, basically it's like the prosecution is to, they have to prove that you have your criminal responsibility and you could understand that you're committing a crime and all of that. And between 14 and 18, of course, you can be arrested and you're criminally responsible and they don't have to prove anything or rebut anything. In terms of the age and criminal capacity, I think the UN Convention, the Committee on the Convention itself, warned South Africa, I think, even before the passing of the Act, while it was still a bill, that this age should be increased to at least, because in common law terms, they've, you know, with the Dolly Capet rule and the Dolly Capet rule, that a child under 14 cannot be criminally responsible and all of that, and then you have to prove it. So since that's our terms in South Africa was following that under criminal law and common law terms, they were preferring that we follow that rule. That if we are saying that, that means we just increase the age of responsibility to 14 and leave it like that. Of course, the preferred way is at 16. I mean, we actually had a debate about it or a discussion about it in my office yesterday. I asked opinions. One said 14, some said 16. And it depends. Basically, what the state party that has signed the convention is up to them. The committee does not tell you what to do with your country. Of course, they give you guidelines. And one of the guidelines, which I completely support, I think, in terms of South Africa, as much as we have all this good ideas and good laws in the constitution, policy-wise, our prisons are not, I mean, I think they still run in apartheid terms. They have been completely transformed to handle younger children in the way that we promise the world or we promise the country that will handle their children. So I think you need to increase the age of responsibility if you are going to deal with children that way, and I think it should be 16 instead of 14, instead of 10. Because a 10-year-old can be put in a detention center, and that's just, for me, my mind cannot accept that. And I think that we should listen to the committee on that level. But there's good news, which I hope that it is good news in terms of if actually the minister acts on it, is that in Section 97 of the Act itself, basically, it mandates the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to determine the category of class of persons who are competent to conduct basically the evaluation of the criminal capacity of children 10 years or older but under the age of 14 years accused of committing a crime, and basically saying that after a few years, like after 5 years, within the period of 5 years, which until 2015, I think he has, to change the age, and that he can make a recommendation to Parliament that they can increase the age of responsibility. I'm hoping if I were him and wanted to leave a legacy in my term, I would actually have done it probably in the first year, because I just think that's something that is more human rights, more child friendly in terms of doing it. If, especially if you were to visit the child centers once in a while, I think you would completely understand why. Yes?
Can I just ask you, where would you, there have been a couple of children involved in murder?
Yes.
At a very young age. Who wants to take those children?
Okay, so basically, I mean, the Act itself does deal with children. So for instance, so let's talk about in age terms, because they're dealt in different ways. So the children between 10 and 14, if they commit such crimes, which are the most serious crimes, so it is 3 years jails in the head, the most serious crimes, they can be put in youth, what they call youth care centers. The child can be sentenced to a longer period. So all children that are put in youth care centers are given maximum of 2 to 5 years in the center. The head of the center is given the mandate that while the child is in the center, you are responsible for educating them, rehabilitating them, and all of that. They make a report, whether in the 2 year period or 5 year, depending on what it is, they must make a report and making a recommendation whether the child should, whether you know they've worked with him and he's changed and that he can leave the center, or that he must be sent to a detention center. That's after he's turned the age, maybe like when he's turned 21 or 18, depending on what the court has said, and then he's then placed into a correctional center. Yes?
Okay, sorry. I want to maybe to add something.
Okay. So
there is also, if a child committed a serious crime, there is something, the home-based care.
Yes.
They put in the home-based care. The social worker, they go, they call it the social worker, they call probation officer.
Yes.
Go in, engage it, everything. If he's going to school, he cannot go to the place of safety. Maybe the magistrate can put him in the home-based care.
Okay.
The home-based care is the home-based care. The social worker must go and go to school and maybe in the weekends also they must go there. It's like a home-based care is like, it's not like a jail. It's not like
yes.
It's not like a parole. Mm. It's like somebody committed a crime. He must be there. If the probation officer he said you must be 6 o'clock at home, you must be 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Yes. If you want to go to the holiday, you must go and report.
Yes.
And also you must also sign a book also. If you go into school, it's going there also, it's like that, if you committed a crime. But if you are not going to school or you are naughty, maybe they can send you
to the detention center.
To the place of safety.
Yeah.
But if you are maybe you do the murder mistake, then
they do a preliminary, basically they do a preliminary assessment before, So basically it tells the story of the child.
We're using the assessment first. Mm. There is an assessment in the Justice Act.
Okay.
If we can see there in that book, if the child committed a crime, the police or the magistrate must phone the social worker, the probation officer.
Yeah.
The probation officer is his duty, or he or her, to phone the family or the mother or the father, and they're sitting down together.
Okay.
They have a document, it's called assessment.
Yes.
Yes, there is assessment.
Thank you.
Assessment. They're using that assessment. That assessment will tell you everything.
Mm.
Is the child going to school?
But I think the question, if I understand your question, which is...
No, the members was asking about the serious matter.
They deal with the serious matter.
The serious matter, that's why to me, other children, if their behavior is good,
yes.
It's not going to... go to the correctional service.
Yes, but you're talking after the child has been sentenced. I think she's asking how you deal with it from the moment the child has committed the crime.
Yes.
We're going to get to how we deal with this sentence. I know, do you still work in Guarita? Or are you in Rosebona?
No, I just, I'm working in Moses by
okay.
Yeah. I deal with the children.
Okay. Don't worry, we'll ask your opinion when we get to social workers, because I know you have a lot of it, since you deal with the children yourself. You have experience with them. We might differ on certain views, though. But we'll deal with that later.
I want to ask a stupid question. Can you tell me quite shortly,
yes,
what categories would a child from, say, 6 or 7 until 21, what categories would they be in prison for?
Okay. So, so it's only from 10, eh? From 10 years old. So under 10-year-olds will not go to jail.
So 7 to 10, 7
or 14 years. Yes, they've increased the age of criminal capacity. So they have three schedules within the act itself. Like the, if you notice, the criminal procedure in 2 years to govern is loads of schedules. So they've shrunk them to three schedules. And the first one basically is minor offences, which include theft of property worth not more than 2,500 rand, malicious damage to property. So basically petty crimes, what they would call. And then the more serious offences, which is Schedule 2, which is including theft of property more than 2,500, but not robbery with aggravating circumstances, assault, that includes causing grievous bodily harm, public violence, culpable homicide, and arson. And all the serious crimes are in the third degree, which would be your Schedule 5 and 6 in the Criminal Procedure 8. They've now put them in Schedule 3 in terms of how they deal with children. That's your murder, your treason, all those crimes are included in Schedule 3.
Now, a child that murders another child, and if the mother murders a child, and the child is under 18, who would see that child? Would be a psychiatric, social worker,
yes,
evaluator,
I mean, all children,
counseling, try to work out what the story is,
yes,
what the report,
yes,
what's the innate character, the reasons for things.
Yes.
And so why things happen to one child, does it become a criminal? And then the same things happen to another child, he doesn't become a criminal.
Yeah.
Yes. So the first thing that they do, every child, no matter whether it's a petty crime or a serious crime, the first thing that at the minute that the police arrive or anything, so they are required to do a preliminary inquiry that gets the story right, which is something that was not necessarily being done previously or wasn't legislated. So they have to do a preliminary inquiry where they have to go through the history of the child, the circumstances of the child self, the level of education, how they think, all of them. It must be assessed. Basically, but it's not assessed necessarily by the psychiatrist. It's assessed by what they call probation officers, which are social workers.
Yeah, well, it's a very good social worker.
Exactly. So basically, they're the ones who do it.
Okay.
And in the inquiry itself, the magistrates can go, the parents can be there. So that's where we go back to the whole holistic thing, that it tries to incorporate everyone, all the parties that are involved in this inquiry. And then basically from there, they decide whether this child will be diverted from the criminal justice system, whether they will be put into a waiting trial center, a detention center, a home-based care, all of that. The categories will then be determined by that, and whether they will be discharged, put it through bail, all of that. So it's determined in the inquiry itself.
Yes, ma'am. The one-stop justice system.
Yes.
I know they have one in Port Elizabeth and a couple of other places. Cape Town doesn't have one.
No.
Which is, they've got all the
They have one in Cape Town. Some of them have not been set up properly yet, and they've not been manned properly. So they are there in name. For me, it doesn't work as well as the others. And in Cape Town particularly, I mean, I have inquiry, yes.
So remember, there is a partner, they are busy in Cape Town.
Yes,
they are busy
with it in terms of that it's coming.
It will be a one-stop.
It's not there yet. And and also it's something that to note that they were given deadlines. And those deadlines, they were given 2 years. Remember the act itself, they were given 2 years to come up with it and to do all of these things and to form an intersectoral committee and all of that. And this intergovernmental departments took their time, missed the deadlines. So the directives were there, but they did not do it. That is something as well that needs to be highlighted.
Are there tests whether a crime had been performed before a couple of times?
As in the child is a repeat offender.
Yeah. How do you get that curious? How can you work that out?
Okay, so there are two ways. Either one of it is that they are previously convicted, they've gone through the charges and their fingerprints are going to show. The other thing is whether, I mean, that is the most accurate of it all, unless the child is confessing to more than one crime and saying that I've done it. Most of the children are repeat offenders, but they are not, they haven't been tried before, or that they haven't been sentenced for the crime before. So they were let go for different reasons. I mean, the act, it basically legislated most of the things that were happening before. Like, for instance, Negro was doing diversions before the act itself enacted and legislated diversion as a core element of the act and saying that that's one of the ways you must deal with children. So, you know, it depends how you do it. The most basic way would be fingerprints and whether they have previous record. That's the one way to deal with it.
Okay, so basically, let's see where we are. We spoke about age and offences. Now, how do you secure attendance at trial? We spoke about the preliminary inquiry of the children. And the one thing that is there before the trial, whether you determine the child, the prosecutor has now the right to divert the children. Before then, of course, it was being done through advocacy, through another civil organisation. Now, it's part of the act. It's something that the National Prosecuting Authority has to really deal with diversion. And I think, like, the reason for this widespread reliance on diversion, especially in cases involving child offenders, is that it can offer significant advantages to the child, and one of it is that they will not have a criminal record. I think it's just basically one of the major benefits to it is that you at least give this child a chance to be employable, to get educated, to finish school in a normal school setting, and all of that, to avoid getting mixed up with even harsher and harder criminals and harsher prison environment or detention environments. So basically, that in itself is a benefit to us. How is it benefiting? And I know, like, there are some people who think, diverting a child out of the criminal system when maybe they need to be in the criminal system, it doesn't mean that they're diverted and walk scot-free. They are, you know, organizations and some government programs that are in place to deal with the diversion and make sure that they're rehabilitated outside. If the child meets the criteria that is set out with his diversion, his or her diversion program, then the report is sent back to the magistrate upon completion of it, and they'll make whether the child goes or he has to another sentence, or they have to go through the trial period process or anything. So that is how they will deal with the child after diversion. Yes, ma'am.
What is the research shown in terms of the success of the diversion program?
Okay. The diversion programs, in terms of success, I think it actually is working to a certain extent. The reason being is that children who are diverted, I think it's usually that they go back to the communities that they are being diverted from. And so, for me, it's you're diverting them from the criminal justice system, but some kids actually need protection from the communities that they're in. Some children are used, and we are briefly going to talk about it, is that they're used by adults in committing crimes. The gang issue, especially in the Western Cape, is a big issue in this province itself. So most kids commit crimes, it's always often common purpose crimes with children. It's always in a group, it's never an individual. And so basically that is the biggest issue, is that how do you say, and how do you measure success at diversion? So is that the child has just completed a program and they're now free to go and they've shown progress? Because children sometimes they put their best foot forward because they need to go. Can push their best foot forward in terms of this. They know how to, some of them. So that's the end. Most of the success rates or successful stories come from Negro. Again, it's an NPO, and I am skeptical at some of the successes, and it's something that we are all guilty of. Finding criteria, you tick boxes, the child came, did this, did that, yes, so that means they're successful. But the question is that then you find 2 years down the line, the child is in the system, they're now in a detention center, and then you question whether, you know, whether the diversion was successful or not.
Question of nature and nurture. And a lot of talk in some schools, some talks. Where are the parents coming into this?
Yes, where are the parents coming into this? Where's the community coming into this? And we go back to the holistic view.
Because you know, the criminologists say
yes.
Nothing to do with nature, it's got to do with nurture.
Yes, I think so too.
You believe
it? Yes, I am all about nurture. I think it has nothing to do with nature, otherwise we are saying that children are born criminals. It's not normal for a 12-year-old to be selling drugs, cooking tea. I mean, you can think, you can make it your own children, your own grandchildren. Think about that. Like, if you were not there in the equation, or the people who surround your grandchildren are not there and showing them the way, would they be who they are today, or would they be selling drugs and doing this? I mean, that's just the reality of it. Is that also most of the children are born in communities that normalize crime. So if, for instance, my neighbor is a tick addict or sells tick, my neighbor is a gangster and my immediate role model. And again, as much as people think that children respond more to Chris Brown on their television than to their neighbor, they actually respond more to their neighbor because that's my immediate role model. It's one that's tangible, that I can see, that I can influence my decisions, my views, my actions. So if I'm recruited by the gang member next door, I'm more necessary to join them because I don't have bread, they're promising me bread. I don't have water, clean water, or whatever it is, I don't have money to go to school, other kids are looking poor and all of that. They can give me all of that. My immediate needs are satisfied by the person who lives next door. So they tend to respond to that. I think it's nurture. And lack of parenting, I think it's there. The breakdown in society, breakdown in home and family is there. And it's completely visible, especially that we have single parents raising children. It's an issue. As much as, I mean, it's circumstances sometimes that's beyond. I was raised by a single parent, but she beat me once. It was enough to fear it, and to know that if I dare do something, she was going to do it again. So I never did it again, and I went to school. But some kids don't have that. No, that's the reality, is that some kids don't have that. And then the burden falls on community, and there we go. I want to talk about that thing. Ubuntu. We like to talk about Ubuntu in South Africa, but the question is Ubuntu in our hearts and in our legislations on paper, or is it in our communities per se? And that's something that says that it's individual now. You fight for your own child, and the rest is gone. You wanted to say something?
I just wanted to say how many families are complete. You talk about family support,
yes.
The mother's died, perhaps of AIDS,
yes.
Or malnutrition, or whatever. The fathers are, we hear about so many absent fathers, they walked out and left the family. There is just no structure.
There's no family structure.
No.
Yes.
So when
the grandparents as well, in left, most grandparents, I mean, in townships, usually grandparents are taking care of children now, yes, because of HIV and AIDS.
Is there some attempt in these diversion programs to actually bring the family into
yes,
the program?
Yes, it is a core component of the whole diversion program. So that the family must be involved. Whoever is the family unit in the child's environment. And if there's no family, then they have to turn to the child and then place them in care. And that's governed by the Children's Act. But yes, they have to be the family to place core.
A little way of life that the Department of Social Development is having 10,000 child killings, community child killings, which means there will be more people in the community able to respond,
yes.
Not waiting.
That's good news.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Yes, and I know also the NACCW, which also trains child care workers, is also working very hard. Are you from any? Okay, good.
I just wanted to know, in a way, is corporal punishment allowed in South Africa still?
No. State versus Williams abolished corporal punishment. It used to be one of the sentence structures. Have you been speaking to the president, Jacob Zuma? Because he did say something during the Christmas holidays about it.
about the fact that Christianity is to blame for all wounded being derogated in our society, and that corporal punishment was one of the things because people will legislate. Apparently they do not raise your child and you should bring it back and all of those things. But one of the points, I don't necessarily blame it on Christianity, but I think the idea of the community taking care of each other, I thought that was quite true. That people don't take care of each other. That's why we have old age homes and orphanages and all of that. And you can blame it, I think, for me, it's the economy. People are broke, they don't have money, so... Yeah, so you tend to your own family than you can tend to the whole community.
Am I ever a problem? Maybe a child, he committed a crime.
Yes.
She said, or he is 16 years. But now he have no birth certificate. Mm-hmm. And now, but you can see in the face he's not 16 years old. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's 21. He's worried to go to jail. But the family, you ask the family is 19, other one 21, but he stick there.
Yes.
I am 16 years. But if you ask the IEC, if you ask the birth certificate, you don't find the birth certificate, you see. What system can the government, what system can take in place? Because you don't get both sides can tell the truth from both sides. But the child is saying 16, but the family say it's not 16. But now there's no paper, there's nothing. And the family don't want to give us the birth certificate. In that system what
yes. So
Ethel,
it's also I'm reading the things to you in this lecture. Actually they now legislated there's a responsibility on police to when the age is uncertain of the child.
Yes.
Especially, I mean, number one, of course, it's particular to do if the child is younger than it should be, and then they look older, which is, I think with all the hormones they're putting food, most kids now look older than they should be, right? So that's one of the things. But then there's also the issue of having older children in places where younger children are housed. And we've experienced that in the centers we work with, because we're an NPO, so most when we do rehabilitation programs, the kids or the participants, they tend to trust, and when we do assessment forms, we've experienced a 40-year-old in the juvenile section, and you're like, what are you doing here? And because they're small in stature, so I can understand, and this is, it also goes to show the fear and just what prison setup is, because they are scared. If they know, if they go to the adult section, they will not survive.
Yeah.
So on one hand, I understand it completely, but on the other hand, it's that they are children. Actually, the ones that I've experienced act like children. I never suspected that they were adults until the time they revealed their age. So that's something. So for me, but in the act itself now, which is something that is being done, and I've inquired a little bit with Charmaine Baden, actually did a research last year about it through the Child Justice Alliance, is that they have to get a medical practitioner to do dental records or something like that. They have to find a way to determine the age of the child. So it is in the act, and it's something that they must be dealing with. So your department must deal with that. You must tell them that you must get a doctor. Yes. Did you have a question? Ubuntu. Yes. Okay, so Ubuntu. What is the meaning of Ubuntu? Kulu, do you want to tell us?
Ubuntu is like generosity.
Yes.
You see, if we have a piece of bread,
yes,
must share. That is Ubuntu.
Yes.
Do the right things.
Yes.
Not do the wrong things.
Yes.
Share, share your ideas, share everything. Bread is Ubuntu.
So it's I am who I am because of others.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And for those that like philosophy, is it Kant or someone? He talks about the categorical imperative and how, yes, I think it is, if I still remember my jurisprudence correctly, I think it's him who talks about categorical imperative and how basically it's about the universal law.
If you don't want me to punch you, you don't punch me, so that next time I don't punch you as well.
Yeah.
So it's just that one. So it's basically what Ubuntu is. And Ubuntu, in practical terms, is the fact that you, a child, is raised by a village. So I can testify to this, because when I was growing up, I think I've said this in my office, and my friends know this, I have a phobia of adults. And why do I don't smoke, I don't drink, and one of the things that I never did it is because I was always scared that if I went to my local tax shop, because I was tempted to try smoking because I always thought it was cool, everyone in my school, some of my friends did it. But I never did it because I always thought that all the person behind the counter would know my mom, would tell them, or that they would discipline me. And it was the thing, that was basically the culture in my street. So another thing is that there was a boy I liked at the corner. I never dated him, even though I liked him, because I was scared that someone in my neighbor would find out all of that, because they have the right to discipline. Like if my neighbor, if I stole something, which I occasionally did on the grape tree, on my neighbor, who always liked to climb the tree and guavas and all of that, if I did it, and if they hit me, if I went to report them to my mom, I would say, what did you do? I stole their guava. My mom would say, oh, there, you deserved it. That is what. So it was basically people were responsible. Now, my younger sister is opposed to us, me and my other sister. She's a 90s child. She's different. I have the right to do this. So basically, I think in 90s, the constitution, whereas it was supposed to actually heighten people's need to have more Ubuntu, it actually lessened it. It's now an individual society. So now, my sister is like, no, you don't tell me, you're not my mother. So you would have no right to tell me what to do. And it's the same with parents themselves. That my child is this one, so my sister's child is my niece and not my daughter. We were raised that all my mother's sisters were my mothers. Now it's an aunt.
Yeah.
It is completely, you are my aunt and that's it. Your role is an aunt and you are not my mother. You do not tell me what to do. You do not discipline me. And so the reversal is that, yes, children say, you are not my aunt, but also adults say, you are not my responsibility, so I take care of my own. And if that responsibility fades, I have no other responsibility towards anyone else. And that's where
How did that change come about?
To be honest, I think it's Western traditions.
Yeah.
Globalization.
Yeah.
We love it, but it also has changed the way society thinks. And I think also the way economy rides. I think back then people had a way of sharing, there was plenty, now there's less. Of course, the economy is one of the major attributors to Ubuntu. Because back then, I remember when we were young, my mom would buy 3 outfits, one for me, one for my cousin, one for my sister, all shared. 3 girls. There was no differentiation. But now, the little money you get, you buy for your girl because you don't have extra money to buy. And that's just that the change has changed. It's not just about money, it's also about just that responsibility to nurture and to care. It's like I care for my own. As long as my child is not giving me problems, why should I care about the neighbor? So that type of caring is gone.
Now when we're talking about the Ubuntu and individuality,
yes.
Can you explain the difference between the prisons and correctional services?
Okay. That's where we were going.
Thank you.
Yes, nice. Okay. So, prisons are correctional services. And then you have correctional. They used to be called prisons in apartheid times, and then they changed them to correctional centers after the constitution was enacted, so that's why. And then you have what you call place of safety, or youth care centers, right? So that's where the children are housed. So now all under 18s do not go, in the X they use the term detention center, which also implies that they will go to prison. And basically, if they go into a place of safety, so if they are convicted for whatever crime, most of them will go to a place of safety if they are under 18. Between 18 and 21, they will be sent to a correctional service center, but it will be separated from adults. and that's where they will say that this is a youth care center. And that's how, so that's where the separation is. This is managed by the Department of Correctional Services. This is managed by social development. And on that hand, especially, I mean, we were going to talk, or I want to talk about the separation. Because for it to work, and for the act, it even says that for it to work, the departments, the way they had to transfer with each other, to transfer these children, had to be put in place properly, and that they had to put certain policies in place. So now they were given also some years to do it. They didn't do it. For instance, there are some places of safety that are being managed by Department of Education that's supposed to be social development. Now, if education is managing a place of safety where children in conflict with the law are, basically they're going to prioritize education, but not rehabilitation. They do not have the capacity or the strength or the know-how to deal with them in a social format. So they're getting educated, but they're not getting the other half, which is it in the interest of society? It's not, because what we are saying is that we are lenient to children and in a human rights manner so that they are better people than they were and that they're able to function properly in society in a way that they'll become productive adults, and that is not happening. And that's a major challenge. And in detention centers and correctional services, you still have children, because remember, the act is not retrospective. So all children that committed and were convicted before April 1st, 2010 are not protected by the child in terms of where they are. So if they were, it's not like their sentences will go down now, and they will go, the child justice now says this, so we can now change it because it stays for them. Only children who committed crimes from the 1st of April 2010 are then covered. And of course, hence the famous child who allegedly murdered Eugene Terblanche. It was the first test case, I think, of the Child Justice Act, which caused an uproar, and everyone wanted to be in camera, they wanted to take, there's like the Child Justice Act says the trial must be in camera, the child is now in a place of safety, and people were just infringing on many of these rights, including the media, mostly the media. And that is the issue, because now he's placed in this place of safety, which for me, it's like there are two ways to it. Because number one, there were all these reports about how he has a bed, he has three meals a day, so he's very happy there. And it gave the public the idea that in places of safety, children are having a great time of their life, and that this Child Justice Act is just lenient, it's soft on crime, and it's going to do just basically, in derogatory terms, juvenile delinquents are going to be running wild in the streets, which is not true. I mean, you have to question why a child, number one, is so happy to get three meals a day for the first time in his life after his. He should be very scared that he might go to jail. You know, so that shows you again the whole mood question, and that it wasn't there before in his life, that he never had a bed and all of that. And that's what society, that's what the reality of most of the children are before they go to the centers.
Are there schools now in place of safety? Because before, children went to the local school. Are they now, is there a school in the place of safety?
They do go to some local schools, some of it depends, and then there are schools in some. The school though, it's not your normal grade 11, grade 12, which I think it should be. It's mostly ABET. So, and for me, in terms of education with children, it's also another question that I have, is that they should have made it a mandate for Department of Education to move in each of the centers. Because, so you have a child who's 16, and you have a child who's 11. This one probably is in, what is grade 11? A child who's 11 is probably in grade 5, 6, primary school age and high school age. When they go there, they're not proper assessments being done. So they're put in the same classes, and they're not being measured at what level they are at. So the child who's more advanced is probably doing ABET level 1, and the child who's less advanced is doing probably ABET level, depending on what they do, which I know previously what they used to do, is that they would group these boys or these girls according to size. So if you were taller, So because you, which I, look for at one end, it's like, okay, so you must not have the maybe the strength to hit another boy or another, which is understandable. But then, if I, so basically, you go into a program just of your height or your size, which is not something that that works, because when you leave and you don't consider my level and where I am at in society and how I can function, how I can properly be rehabilitated, and then I'm then left to go back into society without being properly rehabilitated because you gave me a wrong program, then it doesn't work. It doesn't, so it that must be better managed.
Yes, can I ask, do you still have criminal courts in Lango and Yango, community courts?
Community courts, yes, we do have, because we still have one.
Was part of getting crime.
Yes.
I heard that children who have been convicted, and when they turn 18, that their records will be expunged. Is this right?
I wish that was true. No. They have directives in the in the act that says that you have 5. It depends on the schedule and all of that. Then you know you have 5 years, I think, for after the sentence has been served for it to be expunged. It's lesser now because in the adults I think it's 15 or 10 years. For kids it's 10 years. It's 5 years or 2 years depending on the schedule. But if there are, of course, compelling reasons for the report to be expunged, then they will, then the minister is the right to do it before the years have passed, I think so. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have adequate staff? And how quickly are these cases heard? Or is it immediate? Or are they rooted into the right direction early on, or are they kept in some area waiting, as many other people?
So with children, the act says fast and it says all these times. That is the major flaw now in the implementation of the act, is that they do not have enough probation officers who actually are trained at the level that they're supposed to deal with this. So all and magistrates as well, they haven't trained magistrates in specific just child justice matters to deal with the cases. So we still have the backlog, we're still dealing with the same delays. They're not as much as it was before, but definitely we're still battling and the targets have not been met. I mean, for instance, the NPA even did not divert enough children in the first period of years to reach their target in terms of the Schedule 1 offences. Because all children who commit Schedule 1 offences they can demand it and they're obligated to divert them, and they haven't diverted them, they haven't reached their targets. Such that more children were diverted before the Child Justice Act was enacted than they have been after the act has been enacted. So that's also a challenge, is that they do not have enough manpower at the moment, and they haven't trained enough people. I think it's not because, I think there's job issues in this country, so we can't claim that there was enough people interested in probation work. I think it's a matter of actually making people aware of their needs. And then I think they'll have lots of applications and they can have a trainer and train people and get the job done. I think it's quite important. Crime is an issue in this country and we need to deal with it in a proper manner. Can I take care of that?
I just want to ask, when a child has committed a crime and the police pick them up,
yes,
are they treated in the right way, or are they thrown into a cell with adults before they are processed? How does that work?
Okay, so now they have to do this preliminary inquiry.
But does it happen? That's the question.
It's happening, not in the way that it should. And that's another thing that we have to talk about, the challenges in implementing this beautiful legislation. Is that, number one, because there are not enough police officers trained in dealing with children. So when they come in conflict with the law and the police picks them up, so that not enough of the police officers know the regulations in the act. I think about, while I'm flipping, I'll talk. I want to get you a number. I think only about, and this is a national figure, is that, I think about 50,000 police officers have been trained to, have gone through only phase 1 and 2. There are 3 phases that they put in the national directives. to train the police officers. I think only about 50,000 police officers by the end of 2010 had been trained to do the work. So that's not enough on a national level, number one. I think about they reported that about 10,000 children are arrested or charged. This is not so clear according to statistics whether they're actually charged or just arrested. About 10,000 come every month, they're arrested. 10,000 children are arrested in this country. But there's only 50,000 police officers nationally. One suspicion that is going down around amongst us in the civil organizations is that there's a decrease actually since the enactment of this act, that there's a decrease in number of arrests or children going to detention centers. For me, my opinion, and I'm looking into it, is that the police, because they are not adequately trained and they do not want the burden of what the act puts upon them to deal with these children, because they do not have, they haven't built a separate holding services for children, or they don't have the facilities. They let you go and say, we'll catch you when you're 18. And that's a major issue as well. Because how does it help us as society to let go of a child who's coming contrary to the law? But also, how does that help a child? Because even if a child steals a sweet or is buying drugs or doing, especially those type of social crimes, it's important to deal with them with their children so that they do not take it into their adulthood. Research has actually shown that if you do not deal with a juvenile between the ages of 14 and 16 and nip it in terms of the law and put it in their minds that they could be arrested, if they pass the age between 16 and 18 and they move away, actually they pass the age of 18, they will become an adult offender no matter what. And it's very hard, and only maybe when they reach the ages of 40 and all of that, they'll turn back and realize, okay, we should turn back. So that's a critical age to actually like deal with it if the child comes in contact with the law. And most of the children, some of them are either without care, they go back to parenting, without care. Maybe a guardian abuse is an issue with most of the children. Dependency on gangs is a major, major issue. In terms of goals, it's usually I'm in love with the guy who's doing wrong things and he asks me to do this and that, and I do it because I'm in love. So that's always the issue. So all of these things are doted, and if you don't train, and that's the major theme in terms of this, is that if they are not trained properly, if they do not know what's in the act, how are they best to serve the children and how best to serve society, because it's about interests of justice as well. So both, we are falling short on that.
Sorry, what feedback have you had about the Australian programs which taken sort of first offenders and given them insight into what it's like to be in jail? And usually it scares the daylights.
A program like that?
In Australia.
Okay, I didn't know that. That's quite interesting. I will look into it. But does it work? What is the success? I don't know about the program.
You've just played a little reports from the interview. I'm sorry, who said it?
I believe that works, actually. In our, like what we do as an organization, we have a magazine called Inside Out. I think there was a clause in my contract about marketing. But I did say I would reference my work. We have Inside Out, basically our methodology is using creative arts, teaching them social skills and life skills and all of that. And part of that we publish the artworks and the poetry and all of that in this magazine called Inside Out, which you can access it on the website. Anyway, so basically, we take it into schools and we share the stories and experiences in the schools. And it's part of our prevention program. And basically, it's to place it in the mind of youth at risk, the realities of prison. And that's quite important in our opinion, that if they know, because most of the kids, there's this, especially on the Cape Flats, this thing of street cred, that it's like going into the army, especially in colored communities, because the gangs are deeply entrenched in them, is that they go into prison, they get the number, whatever number they get, they come out, it's like they've been awarded another star, and then they're moved up higher up in the rank. And that's quite important. So kids have these aspirations that I want to go to prison, I want to go to prison because I can get that. And some of them, of course, their parents, or I know like two kids in Bonnytown who, like in our program, kept on saying, I'm not going to do anything about it because I want them to sentence me and send me to prison. I asked why, and they were like, no, my grandfather's in prison and that's the only way I'm going to spend it, and the other one, my father. And you see, it's the need of parenting. He needs his father, and his father is going to spend the rest of his life in jail, so he thinks, oh, if I do this, I'm going to be sent to my father. And he thinks, and as I said, but you know you're a juvenile, they're not going to send you to an adult prison, so you're not going to see your father for a long time anyway. He's like, no, I'm just going to try, it might work. And that's the, you know, so for, you can see that most of the children, and that's another thing that people in society miss today, it's a cycle, number one, but also a lot, especially for people who are pro-punishment, is that children are not psychological criminals. For me, psychological criminals should be sent because we need protection and they need protection from themselves, in a way. But social crime is an issue, and that's what our children are about, is that they're social criminals. It's, the foundation of it is the breakdown in community. Somehow, some way, whether it's drugs, use of drugs, breakdown in the home itself, the influence of gangs or something, there's always a story behind the crime. And it's usually not a pretty story, that foundational. You were the end up first and then.
Tell us, a big number of people in prisons are waiting trials.
Yes.
How do you treat the young ones? Do they get preference in the legal system to either be sent back or imprisoned?
Well, the Constitution, all of our laws, our beautiful laws, say that child is, must be kept for the shortest time as a measure of last resort. It's now enacted for under 18. For youth, and I mean, I'm going to generalize because I think also under 21 should be included in this phase. So some of them are awaiting trial. Some of them have awaited trial. One of the reasons why I started the work I do is because I visited a prison with a BNSF when I was a law student. And I got to talk to young people and I was like, oh, really? You've been awaiting trial for 4 years. And you know, so you can imagine. So this is a 14-year-old who's been arrested, spent 4 years and now they're about, what, they're almost 18. They've missed their whole high school period. So when they come out, they're not necessarily going to go back to school. So that's basically it. And of course, you know, correctional services, what's the famous word she said last year was that awaiting trials, the stepchild of correctional services, and they're trying to fix it. So we'll see with this year's budget vote whether they're going to include them and try to deal with them in a minute, actually extend, because I think this year they're planning to give them a uniform and actually put them into education programs. But awaiting trial, they haven't prioritized children. They haven't been prioritizing them. They're only going to start now with the act, and hopefully it's getting better. It gets better now. Because they do have a clause about awaiting trial periods that children must await and all of that. So we hope that it gets better. Yes.
There's often said violence and crime. Adults, you know, at 16 or 18, that they are already like related very often. And the kids ask to make the relation drink while not taking medication.
Yes.
So that's not with the other. Now, if kids are smoking the stuff at 9 and 10 and drink 6 and other things, and that's a form of crime, how do you assess all, what way are they assessing all these things? Who will listen to them, tell their story? Because normally, something has happened to that kid that makes them behave like that, and they've got into a crowd, and they have this and that. Who are the professional people? I know you are understaffed and trained for a number of these, you mentioned that. Who are the people who have time to assess and watch the children?
Yeah.
To look at the behavior patterns, who will talk, let the child talk.
Okay. Again, it is a social worker. It is a social worker. Unless a parent or
a child care worker,
you know, unless like your parents who are rich, they can refer you to a psychiatrist. But if it's in state terms, it's proper state terms, it's child care worker.
Social workers, psychologists,
yes. They do have in some centers, they are fortunate enough to have a psychologist.
You have all types of people in all professions, you want somebody good. That the kid can relate to this with her
addiction. Exactly. I agree that they don't always have it. In child care facilities, in places of safety, in youth care centers, they actually now do have some psychologists. In some, again, of course, it's usually one or two psychologists to a lot of kids, but they do have some. And what they'll do is that the social worker will deal with the heavy cases, they'll refer the child to a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
And a lot of these people with the very heavy cases, they're very very good.
Yes, that's the situation.
You mentioned earlier that you often take stories into schools and share these stories, which I do think is very important. Is this has this become part of the life orientation curriculum by introducing these stories? And if not, why not? And is anything being done to try and get this included in the curriculum?
The second
question is, as we know, a lot of the problem lie in the fact that these children are not occupied after school. Now, I know there are some organizations, such as the Amy Beale Foundation, that will call on volunteers to go into the schools to do lots of different things, even reading stories to them, to keep them occupied so as to combat their crime, sex, drugs, all these things that do happen after school hours. Are there any other organizations that will get involved in that? Is it part of your organization? So they're just those two issues I'm interested in.
Okay, the first issue is that it's one of our personal missions as an organization to get accredited to do the work. What we do currently is that we contact individual schools and we work through the life orientation program. So we work with whoever is in charge of the life orientation program. Accreditation is the Department of Education story it takes
time.
And we only, to be fair, the Department of Education, it's a program that we started only 2 years ago to go into schools.
And what age do you focus on?
We focus on the grade 10 to 12 age.
With the agility.
Yes, that's what we focus on. The second thing, there are not many organizations that do have after school program. There are not many. There are few community-based organizations that do some sort of informal work. Amy Beale is one of them. Us personally, we don't do after-school programs. We just have to capacity at the moment to do that phase. Our core work is in prison rehabilitation and post-release. That's how we do. We try to filter in, of course, with our other ex-offenders, which is basically a post-release program that they go into schools and they go and do the workshops themselves, so they deliver their own stories. When we are fortunate enough that one of the participants was actually involved in the program and they are released in time to distribute that magazine, it just makes a bonus because the kids get to interact with him or her and then they're able to ask and be answered questions on a personal level. I think that's what's good. But we'll put it on our agenda. How's that?
Excellent.
I think it's something that is something. I know my colleague, one of the things she's actually said, trying to start up her own project for it. So, yeah, so that's something that I know, a lot of people in our work have desires and ambitions to start it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not enough, and if any of you are interested in after-school programs, please do so.
I would like to conclude, because I think an hour is past, and then we've talked. What I do want to conclude with is that children are children, and no matter how vile,
no matter how vile their actions are, they have the right to be treated as children if they come in conflict with the law. But also they have the right to be treated as children because they're children, and that if they're rehabilitated on a child-like level, in a human rights manner, they're more likely to become positive adults than not. So that's what I would like to leave with you. I would like to leave with you the fact that I think the work we do, the fact that you're sitting here is contribution to change. And I hope that whatever you've learned today or you have more desire to go and read the Child Justice Act, which is not that long, to be honest, but also that you are able, whether you are sitting and you like to write editorials, you like to write to submit and make submissions to Parliament and all of that, that you put pressure on our government to act instead of just put papers that are lovely and that the world can see so that they think South Africa is a beautiful nation to do whatever. That underneath it all, we are a troubled nation, and if we don't fix and act upon it, that of course our kids are just going to, we're just going to breed more kids who are prone to violence, prone to crime and all of that, and it doesn't help us. And I hope that it was an enjoyable lecture. I heard that, did some of you watch the choir this morning?
Yes.
Yes, you need a copy. So it's a brilliant movie. It's about basically a child and an adult who go through rehabilitation together in Lupo prison in Paul's home. If any of you, my contact details, I think I was at summer school when you signed, I think you joined, by the way. It's called The Choir.
The Choir,
basically. I think it's a great movie or documentary for you to watch, and it's a visual aid at what exactly why the need to rehabilitate, the need to have diversion, the need to make sure that kids avoid prison.
Where's it obtainable?
It's obtainable from the Tricontinental Festival. If you give them a call, they'll send you a copy. Tricontinental Festival. Thank you for coming.
I'm going to go to the hospital.